the miners were in from Moseyed Creek and the other diggings to the west. The summer washing had been good, and the men's pouches were heavy with dust and nuggets. The Klondike had not yet been discovered, nor had the miners of the Yukon learned the possibilities of deep digging and wood firing. No work was done in the winter, and they made a practice of hibernating in the large camps like Circle City during the long Arctic night. Time was heavy on their hands, their pouches were well filled, and the only social diversion to be found was in the saloons. Yet the shovel was practically deserted, and the virgin standing by the stove yawned with uncovered mouth and said to Charlie Bates, "If something don't happen soon, I'm going to bed. What's the matter with the camp anyway? Everybody dead?" Bates did not even trouble to reply, but went on moodily rolling a cigarette. Dan McDonald, pioneer saloonman and gambler on the Upper Yukon, owner and proprietor of the Tivoli and all its games, wandered forlornly across the great vacant space of floor and joined the two at the stove. "Anybody dead?" the virgin asked him. "Looks like it," was the answer. "Then it must be the whole camp," she said with an air of finality, and with another yawn. MacDonald grinned and nodded and opened his mouth to speak, when the front door swung wide and a man appeared in the light. A rush of frost, turned to vapour by the heat of the room, swirled about him to his knees and poured on across the floor, growing thinner and thinner and perishing a dozen feet from the stove. Taking the wisp broom from its nail inside the door, the newcomer brushed the snow from his moccasins and high German socks. He would have appeared a large man had not a huge French Canadian stepped up to him from the bar and gripped his hand. "Hello, daylight," was his greeting. "My God, you good for sore eyes." "Hello, Louis. When did you all blow in?" returned the newcomer. "Come up and have a drink and tell us about Bone Creek." "Why, doggone you all, shake again. Where's that partner of yours? I'm looking for him." Another huge man detached himself from the bar to shake hands. Olaf Henderson and French Louis, partners together on Bone Creek, were the two largest men in the country. And though they were but half a head taller than the newcomer, between them, he was dwarfed completely. "Hello, Olaf. You're my meat. Savvy that," said the one called Daylight. "Tomorrow's my birthday and I'm going to put you all on your back, Savvy. And you too, Louis. I can put you all on your back on my birthday, Savvy. Come up and drink, Olaf, and I'll tell you about it." The arrival of the newcomer seemed to send a flood of warmth through the place. "It's Burning Daylight," the virgin cried, the first to recognize him as he came into the light. Charlie Bates's tight features relaxed at the sight, and MacDonald went over and joined the three at the bar. With the advent of Burning Daylight, the whole place became suddenly brighter and cheerier. The barkeepers were active, voices were raised, somebody laughed, and when the fiddler, peering into the front room, remarked to the pianist, "It's Burning Daylight," the waltz time perceptibly quickened and the dancers, catching the contagion, began to whirl about as if they really enjoyed it. It was known to them of old time that nothing languished when Burning Daylight was around. He turned from the bar and saw the woman by the stove and the eager look of welcome she extended him. "Hello, virgin old girl," he called. "Hello, Charlie. What's the matter with you all? Why wear faces like that when coffins cost only 3 ounces? Come up, you all, and drink. Come up, you unburied dead, and name your poison. Come up, everybody. This is my night, and I'm going to ride it. Tomorrow I'm 30, and then I'll be an old man. It's the last fling of youth. Are you all with